Hello there. I'm Dr. Vivian Low, and you're on VLMD Rounds, a podcast on medical science and tools to optimize your health. Today, I am recording outdoors. I am in Barcelona. I was here for a conference, and if you're accessing this podcast via YouTube, you'll see the Arc de Triomphe behind me. And it's such a beautiful day that I thought I would try to record this episode outdoors. So it's going to be a little bit noisier than usual, but I think we'll get through it. One of my Q&A sessions, Mr. Blue requested that I do an episode on the skin. And I have to say, I was a bit daunted by that, because when you think of the skin, it's a huge topic, and I didn't quite know how I would approach that. I thought to myself, goodness, that's going to be maybe a 5-hour podcast episode, which I won't subject you to. I really don't want to record for 5 hours. So I had to think about how I would approach it. Every time I think about the skin, I actually think about something that occurred to me many years ago, and I thought that maybe I would talk specifically about that. Let's go. So let me tell the story first. I think this was over 10 years ago, and at that time nothing specific. I mean, of course, I had a lot of stress in my life, but who doesn't? And I remember that I had a booster shot from my hepatitis B vaccine. As a healthcare worker, you know, you could get needle pricks and things like that. And so generally, when we were med students, we got our hep B vaccines, and it was time for my booster. So I just had a booster, and also had my PPD to screen for TB. And very shortly after that, within a week, I woke up one day and noticed that I had an itch on my arm. And I scratched it, and that was fine, except the itch came back, and I scratched it again, and again, and again. And very soon, my whole body was itching everywhere. And, you know, I thought, this is strange. I wonder what's going on. I applied some lotion. I thought maybe my skin is dry. And then it didn't go away. So I thought, maybe I'm having a little bit of a reaction to the PPD test, or maybe even to the booster. Didn't think much of it. But the itch persisted, and it started to get worse. And now I was itching everywhere, especially my shins, and I was scratching quite a bit. My skin turned quite raw and red and painful even. And then I started trying different strategies to address this itch. I put icy hot on my skin. I put ice on my skin. I slapped myself. Anything to distract myself from this horrible, horrible itch. And nothing worked. I mean, it would work for a short while, and then the itch would come back. And of course, you know, I was still thinking at the time, this is just some strange little reaction, maybe to the PPD or to the booster, and not to worry, it'll probably go away. It didn't go away. I started to have a hard time sleeping at night, and I remember just waking up in the middle of the night with an intense itch all over my body and just scratching. I got to the point where I was basically bleeding from scratching so hard. My shins were bleeding, my arms were bleeding, and I had these welts on my skin because I would get these hives appear on my skin. Didn't start that way, but it got to the point where these hives appeared. And then, even worse, I had dermatographism. And this means basically that when I wrote on my skin with my finger, I could see the letters come up in welts on my skin. So I could write my name on my arm and my name would pop up on my skin. And it was unbearable because I really couldn't wear clothes easily because the seams would make me break out in welts. And I was just so uncomfortable. I couldn't focus. I couldn't sleep. And it was miserable. Now, as a doctor, I always felt sorry for people who had pain and, you know, always tried to help those people with pain. But I'll be honest, when someone told me they had an itch, I was just like, oh, it's just an itch. How bad is that? I mean, it's not like you're in pain. And now I was itching. I was itching all over and it was making my life miserable. I went, of course, to, you know, seek medical help. I went to the doctors. I went to dermatologists. They did all kinds of tests. Everything came back negative. And they offered me the usual things. They offered me antihistamines, which I tried some over-the-counter antihistamines, and those didn't work. And I tried some topical hydrocortisone cream that didn't really work. And they were at the point where they wanted me to take steroids and so forth. And even though my quality of life was quite miserable, somehow I resisted that. Turns out, you know, I recently found out that people with chronic urticaria, chronic hives, actually have a similar quality of life to people on dialysis. So I didn't know that at the time, but it really was quite a miserable existence. And this was going on now for weeks, and then it started to go into months. And nobody really understood what I was going through, especially with the weird dermatographism. There were some people who thought that it was mildly poetic, that as a writer, I would have this ability to write on my skin and have the welts come up. And actually, I thought it was rather trite. I thought, that's kind of embarrassing. I wouldn't have chosen something so obvious. But, you know, I was also just really frustrated because there was really nothing to do at that point. So that's my lead up to what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk primarily of chronic itching. Now, I had, I think, chronic spontaneous urticaria with dermatographism, which just means I had chronic hives that occurred spontaneously, and I had this, as I said, weird ability where the hives would come up whenever I wrote on my skin or touched my skin in any way. Anything touched my skin, it would come up. But today's episode, I'm just going to focus specifically on the itch component because that was the part that distressed me the most, and that was the part that made me the most miserable. And I think when you think about urticaria, the part that people really struggle with the most would be itch. Let's talk about how we sense itch. Now, it's kind of hard to describe an itch, but everyone knows what you mean when you say an itch, and some of you might be itching right now just hearing me talk about it. But it's this sensation, of course, in your skin, and it's only relieved by, obviously, scratching, right? So everybody knows this. Now we have these somatosensory neurons or nerves that are innervating our skin, and these neurons in the skin are actually what we call pseudo-unipolar, which means that the axon has two branches. We have one part of the axon which is in the peripheral area of the skin, and it innervates that skin, and then it synapses with another neuron basically in the spinal cord. So it goes all the way into the spinal cord. And we have the cell body of that nerve, that neuron, in what we call the dorsal root ganglia. And these are right next to the spinal cord. So that's where the cell bodies of the neurons live. And then they have their axons extending into the spinal cord and also out all the way to the skin. Now, we have then these non-specific ion channels that will basically open and cause membrane depolarization when you have this itch sensation. And this in turn opens what we call voltage-gated sodium channels that then initiate and propagate an action potential. So now this action potential or nerve impulse is conducted all the way to the spinal cord. And at the spinal cord, it sort of like catches a connecting flight, you know, and it hops onto a neuron that goes all the way up to the brain. And that is when you have that sensation in the brain of the itch. So we think of these neurons from this, you know, periphery up to the brain as giving afferent signals, afferent, A-F-F-E-R-E-N-T. And that means that these signals go from the periphery up to the brain. But those neurons can also be efferent, E-F-F-E-R-E-N-T. And this means that they can actually affect the peripheral tissue as well. So they can release some chemicals called neuropeptides, and these neuropeptides now are released by the neurons and they affect the peripheral tissues, in this case, the skin. Now, when we talk about itch for a long time, people thought that itch was just a subset of pain. And they figured that, you know, if you have a big stimulus, then you get pain, and if you have a small stimulus, then you get itch. And that was basically how we thought about itch for a long time. But it turns out that we actually have specific fibers that are, you know, for itch, okay? And these are the C fibers. And these C fibers are actually very small and slow conducting fibers. They're unmyelinated, which means that they're not covered by this fatty myelin sheath. And so now the nerve conduction through them is very slow. And generally, that's anyway how we classify these sensory nerves. We look at the size, the conduction velocity, and also the amount of myelination that it has. So with these itch neurons, small, slow, and unmyelinated. And we also have other types of fibers that are involved with itch, like the A-delta fibers. But the main thing to remember is that these fibers, they can transmit pain, but they also will transmit itch. And pain fibers and itch fibers, they use the same ion channels to signal and to have that nerve conduction. All right. Now, we then discovered that we have these specialized receptors specific for itch, okay? So amongst them, the mass-related G-protein coupled receptor, and this is capital M and then small RGPR, MRGPR, or the mass-related G-protein coupled receptor. We also have the gastrin-releasing peptide receptors, and these are all in caps, GRPR. And these were identified as really specialized pathways for itch. And when we discovered this is when we really started to look into itch in greater detail. Now, I'm going to switch over a little bit to the immune system. And in some previous episodes, I've talked about cytokines. And these are chemicals and molecules that allow cells, immune cells, to communicate with each other. So we have different types of cytokines and they activate different types of immune responses. So when we look at something called type 1 immunity, this is generally when we have to fight intracellular bacteria and viruses. So if you have a bacteria or virus inside the cells of your body, then we will mount something called type 1 immunity. And the effector cytokines that are secreted in type 1 immunity would be classically interferon gamma and tumor necrosis factor alpha. We then also have type 3 immunity, and type 3 immunity is generally for extracellular bacteria and also for fungus, right? So it's antifungal. And the cytokines that are used in type 3 immunity are interleukin-17A and also interleukin-22, just as examples, okay? Those are not the only cytokines, I'm just giving you some examples. Now we also have type 2 immunity, and let's focus on that a little bit, because type 2 immunity is generally for dealing with parasites and also environmental toxins. And the cytokines that are related to type 2 immunity are classically interleukin 4, interleukin 5, and interleukin 13. So we have these cytokines, and you know, they're signaling to different immune cells to mount different immune responses, but they can also cause different sensations and behavior as part of host defense. And this is something we hadn't really thought of before. So for example, we have interleukin 1 beta, interleukin 6 TNF alpha, and interleukin 17. And these are really cytokines that can cause pain. They are, you know, from type 1 and type 3 immunity, but they also can cause a sensation of pain in, let's say, a nerve or in a bone or in a joint. And the end result of having pain generally is immobilization. So when you're in pain, you don't like to move very much. And that is actually good in those cases, because we don't want to spread the infection. For example, we want to limit it in one area. And if you're moving around a lot, then you might help spread the infection. And also, by not moving, you limit the damage that might be occurring in the tissue to that specific area. And so that's how the cytokines can be helpful, even though pain is not a great sensation. Now, itch is associated with cytokines from type 2 immunity, right? And these would be things like interleukin 33 or thymic stromal lymphopoietin, or TSLP. Now, these cytokines, as usual, will activate different immune cells, the innate cells and the adaptive cells, and those cells will now secrete interleukin 4, interleukin 13. Right? But interleukin 33 and TSLP can also directly activate the sensory neurons to cause itch. Okay? So while they stimulate the immune cells to secrete the type 2 immunity cytokines, like interleukin 4 and 13, they themselves can also cause itching in the nerves. And we have all kinds of immune cells like basophils and eosinophils, and the group 2 innate lymphoid cells, mast cells, Th2 cells. All of these immune cells can actually secrete interleukin 4 and or interleukin 13. And you know, we also have interleukin 31. I just want to mention it. This is secreted by Th2 immune cells, and I mention it because it's sort of the iconic cytokine for itch, right? When you have interleukin 31, you're going to itch. The important thing about interleukin 31 is that unlike interleukin 4 or interleukin 13, interleukin 31 may not actually even play a role in skin inflammation. So when they looked at mice models of contact dermatitis, which causes itch in the mice, those mice that were deficient or didn't have interleukin 31, they didn't have much scratching, but they had the same level of inflammation as the other mice with contact dermatitis, right? So it seems to be more specific for itch. And basically, interleukin-31 antibodies can decrease itch in, let's say, atopic dermatitis. It's another condition that has a lot of itch associated with it. So when we have antibodies to interleukin-31 and we give them to people with atopic dermatitis, we decrease the itch, but we really don't impact the inflammation very much. So we still have the inflammation, but the itch is gone. We have antibodies, for example, to interleukin-4. And these antibodies can target interleukin-4, interleukin-13. And an example would be something called dupilumab, D-U-P-I-L-U-M-A-B, dupilumab. And dupilumab will help decrease inflammation and itch as well. So if you target interleukin-4 and 13, you're going to be able to decrease both the inflammation and the itch, unlike 31, which mostly is going to be more itch specific. So as I said, type 1 and 3 immunity tends to lead to pain, and type 2 immunity tends to lead to itch. Of course, that's a huge generalization, and there is actually some overlap between them, okay? And generally, when you have pain, you're going to not want to move, so there's more immobilization. Whereas with itch, you're obviously going to be scratching, and this might be useful if you're trying to dispel parasites from your body or shed some parasites or some kind of toxin from your body. And we think that that behaviorally might be why we want to scratch, right? Why we have the sensation of itching and why we scratch. So let's look at acute and chronic situations with itching. Now, in an acute situation, let's say a mosquito comes and lands on you and bites you, it's itchy and you scratch, and that's protective, right? And generally, when you think about itch, there's no one who will talk about itch without talking about histamine. We think about mast cells classically degranulating, right, and releasing histamines, which cause the itching in our skin. And, you know, we tend to use antihistamines to treat that. This is not often very useful, and this is because we have different histamine receptors, like, you know, histamine 1, 2, 3, 4 receptors. So it really depends on the antihistamine that you choose and whether it addresses the right kind of histamine receptor. But generally, we can think of acute itching as protective. However, chronic itch is very different. It's pathologic, right? And histamines may not even play a role at all, or it may play a minor role. Interleukin-4 and 13 are really not very much involved in acute itching, but they really are the main cytokines that drive the itch sensation in a chronic setting. And these cytokines, interleukin-4, interleukin-13, they sensitize the neurons to other itch agents like the histamine, interleukin-31, TSLP. Right? So they drive the chronic itch sensation, but they are also sensitizing those neurons to other itch agents, and now those neurons become hypersensitive. And the other thing we see in chronic itching is that very soon the skin really has a lot more of these itch neurons in the area of the itch, right? So we hypersensitize in a number of ways. We just have more neurons there, but we are also more sensitive now to other itch agents. So generally, we thought of, you know, itching as this weird sensation, but we didn't really directly relate it to the immune system until we realized that these cytokines can drive that itch sensation. And furthermore, we recently discovered that the JAK-STAT immune pathway is actually involved in itching as well. JAK-STAT is a specific immune pathway. JAK is J-A-K, Janus kinase, all in caps, and STAT is S-T-A-T. And this is an immune pathway that's essentially, you can think of it as involved in cell division and survival and activation of immune cells, proliferation of different immune cells. But we recently discovered that JAK signaling is also seen in sensory neurons. So this is a pathway that has been well delineated in immune cells. And we thought of it as an immune pathway, and now we realize that JAK signaling occurs in neurons as well. And Etchen et al. Really found that JAK1 mediates chronic itch in neurons. However, the pathway is still not very clearly defined, all right? We know JAK1 is involved, and we think it's likely STAT independent, but this immune pathway somehow is activated in neurons during the itch sensation. And what we've noted is that you have JAK activation, and this leads to a rapid influx of calcium into the neuron, really within minutes, very quick, whenever that nerve is exposed to those itch-specific cytokines. And we think that likely this JAK signaling modifies ion channels to allow for this calcium influx that then makes you hypersensitive to itching. And indeed, when you give JAK inhibitors, you have rapid resolution of the itching in cases of atopic dermatitis. So within 1 to 2 days, you'll have really the resolution of the itching, even though the inflammation is still there. We've not actually resolved the inflammation yet, but the sensation of itching is now gone. So we realize that these immune pathways are active in neurons and take part in the sensation of itching. We've also seen that opioid receptors can be involved with itching. So when you give someone opioids, you give them morphine, for example, a lot of times you'll find that they can start itching, right? And you'll have intense pruritus sometimes from the use of opioids. And this is because we now know that new opioid receptors are really going to bring about itching. And if you give naltrexone, which is a medication that is an antagonist to those receptors, then what happens is you can resolve the itching, right? Now, that's specific to the new opioid receptors, because if you actually activate the kappa opioid receptors, those receptors are anti-itch. So you can see that itch and pain are related, but it's very specific to the different types of receptors, with the mu receptor being pro-itching and the kappa receptor being anti-itching. And furthermore, as I said, we have these neuropeptides from neurons that are going to act on the immune cells and the skin cells, so that now actually the nerve is sending out substances to the skin that will cause the itching. And we've seen in people with atopic dermatitis or psoriasis, right, that if they lose nerve fibers in certain areas of their skin, then we don't see the disease in those areas of the skin. So it's actually the nerves that are sending out these molecules, these neuropeptides that are perpetuating the itch. One other thing I want to mention also is that different pathogens can be sensed by neurons. We're used to thinking of pathogens being sensed by, let's say, your immune cells, LPS, for example. But it turns out that your neurons can also sense pathogens and, you know, make these neuropeptides that will now give you the sensation of itching. All right. other thing I want to talk about now is stress, because that's what happened when I had my period of chronic itch, because everyone would say, are you really stressed right now? You must be really stressed. And yeah, I suppose I was. I think a lot of us can identify with that. We have many periods in our lives that are stressful. But, you know, I really, at the time, didn't think it had much to do with my itch. I just thought that this was this weird sensation, and somehow it wouldn't go away. And I thought maybe it had to do, as I said, with the booster shot or the PPD, but I kind of resisted the whole stress issue because, of course, you know, other people are subject to stress and we're somehow exempt as medical providers, right? Well, let me just talk about stress a little bit here. We know about the HPA axis in stress reaction and the sympathetic adrenal medullary system involved in stress. So very simply, we, with the sympathetic system, we actually are secreting, you know, epinephrine and norepinephrine in that fight or flight response when we deal with, let's say, acute stress. But you know, we can perpetuate that that system when we are chronically stressed, and this can be due to mental stress as well. And in terms of the HPA axis, I think everyone has heard of that. We know we have corticotropin releasing hormone secreted by the hypothalamus, and this will then cause the anterior lobe of the pituitary to make and secrete ACTH, and this will now act on the adrenal gland to the adrenal cortex to make cortisol, which is, you know, to help with immunoregulation, because we want to actually kind of control any inflammatory reactions occurring in your body and dampen it a little bit so it doesn't get out of control. It also helps you access energy to deal with whatever stress is going on. And we've known that skin markers of inflammation are higher in people with chronic spontaneous urticaria than in healthy controls. So, you know, we've started to think about how stress may be involved in itch. One thing that is fairly new is, you know, again, we think of this HPA axis and we think of it as a systemic system. As I said, you know, the hypothalamus secretes this, and then the pituitary secretes that, and then the adrenal glands secrete the cortisol and so forth. But the skin itself has its own HPA axis. I'm going to repeat that. The skin itself has its own HPA axis. I've talked a lot in different episodes about paracrine and autocrine effects and how we need to, in medicine, move away from just looking at systemic effects in the body and look at what is happening in the local tissue, in the local environment of the tissue. So skin, it's actually been very well known for a long period of time that skin has receptors for corticotropin releasing hormone, or CRH. It has receptors for cortisol, it has receptors for ACTH, and these are all expressed in normal skin, right? So wherever you are right now, you have those receptors in your skin and they're being expressed in your skin. And we've seen that actually the receptors for corticotropin releasing hormone, for example, is actually being expressed all the time in skin cells and mast cells, right? And people with urticaria, with hives, actually have increased expression of the CRH receptor. Now, in the situation of acute stress, or if you give people intradermal CRH, we can stimulate these mast cells And you know, these receptors are expressed, highly expressed, and we increase vascular permeability, and we will also induce the production of interleukin 6 and interleukin 18 from skin cells and mast cells and other immune cells in your skin. But the skin cells themselves, the keratinocytes, will produce these cytokines and secrete stress-related hormones. And so now we have the entire HPA axis occurring in your skin. So as you can see, there is actually great crosstalk between your immune cells, your nerve endings, and skin cells all the time. So it's not actually just limited to neurons and the sensation of itching. It's really an intersection between the immune system, the nervous system, and also this HPA axis. Brian Kim, in an article in Neuron, July 2022, actually looked at itch. His lab does a lot of work on itch, and he speculated that itch might represent other sensory symptoms, so things like cough and dysphagia and functional bowel disorders. Because the question he was asking is, I know, in cases of parasites, it'd be a good idea maybe to try and scratch and get rid of the parasites, kind of like a dog scratching their fleas off, you know? But might there be a bigger reason or a bigger context to look at itch? And here he speculates that it might be part of our interoception system. So interoception is this ability to perceive internal signals from your body, like feeling your heartbeat and feeling hunger. These are all internal signals that your body is giving you. And when you're able to pick up those signals, that is called interoception. So when we think about the vagus nerve, this is really the longest nerve in your body, and most of it is somatosensory, right? We think of it mostly as a sensory nerve, and it goes from your brain all the way through your body. It innervates the heart, it innervates the lungs, organs, viscera, right? All the way down your digestive tract. And it's really very much, as I said, involved in sensation, right? It's a sensory nerve. And we see the same receptors, the itch receptors, on these, on the branches of the vagus nerve, innervating the lungs and also the gut. So for example, we have the purinergic P2X3 receptor that is associated with pain, but also with itch. And this is widely expressed within the jugular and nodose ganglia neurons innervating the lung. And that's part of the vagus system. Now, interestingly, this receptor, P2X3, you don't have to remember the name, but it is a specific receptor for pain and itch. We see this in the vagus nerve, which is mostly a sensory nerve. And when you give P2X3 antagonists, these antagonists were made and developed just to treat itching. But when you gave this antagonist, you also noted improved chronic cough symptoms in those patients. So not only did we treat the itch, we also treated chronic cough, which, if you think about it, when you have the sensation to cough, kind of is like an itch in your lungs, right? Or in your airways. Yeah, an itch in your airways that makes you cough and expel, whatever is in your airway. So very interesting there. And remember dupilumab, D-U-P-I-L-U-M-A-B, dupilumab, that was the antibody that I mentioned earlier to interleukin 4. Well, it addressed itch and inflammation, right, in patients who had those skin conditions. However, what's really interesting here is it's being now used to address loss of smell in certain patients who had nasal polyps and chronic rhinosinusitis associated with those polyps. Okay, so these patients, they, because of the chronic inflammation and irritation, they lose their sense of smell. But when you give dupilumab, which is an antibody for interleukin-4, guess what? They actually have improvement in smell as compared to the controls. And this was actually very, very noticeable. It wasn't a little bit. They had very significant smell improvement. So I know that in patients with COVID-19, that some of them may have lost their sense of smell. And I've just always wondered why, you know, whether anyone has ever tried dupilumab on those patients, right? This blocks interleukin-4. And, you know, in these cases of chronic rhinosinusitis, we've restored the sense of smell. So perhaps in patients who have anosmia or loss of sense of smell due to COVID-19, this might be another strategy to try. So again, you know, when we think of itch, maybe it's part of this bigger context of noxious irritants to our body that we are able now to sense and then react against, right, to try to dispel them. So coughing and also, you know, other sensations like smell, for example. Okay, so a quick wrap up first of what we've talked about, and then I'll give you, you know, basically the end of my story and what happened with my itching story, and also maybe some tips on what to do if you're in this situation as well. So we talked about itch and how originally we thought of it as part of pain, and now we know that itch has specific fibers and it's still associated with pain, but we definitely have specific itch receptors and itch nerve fibers that are just kind of dedicated to that itching sensation. And we have also different cytokines that are secreted that can be very itch specific. And if we block those cytokines, we block the sensation of itching. And some of these cytokines are not even that much involved in inflammation, right? So that immune cells that are secreting these cytokines, some of those cytokines are mostly to perpetuate the itch sensation. Now, some of them obviously address both inflammation and itching, and if you block those, you improve the inflammation and itching in patients. But we see that the immune cells themselves use certain immune signaling pathways that we now know are also present in neurons. So something that we thought was specific to immune cells, we now see in neurons as well, these signaling pathways. And this signaling pathway, specifically the JAK-STAT pathway that I talked about in neurons, is what perpetuates the sensation of itching. Furthermore, neurons themselves can secrete substances back to the peripheral tissue that will actually cause the sensation of itch. So you can see it's a two-way street. We have something in the periphery that the neuron senses and causes the sensation of itch, but we also have these neurons secreting substances that will now perpetuate the sensation of itching in the skin. And then we went on a little further to talk about stress, and we talked about the HPA axis, and the main thing to remember there is that we have the systemic HPA axis, but we have local HPA axis present in the skin. And so, you know, we have these immune cells that are reacting and interacting with hormones that are secreted locally within the skin tissue itself. So the local tissue is very much involved in the stress reaction. And finally, we looked at the broader context of itching, and we saw how, you know, all these interoceptive signals, these internal signals that we can perceive in our bodies, may have a wider context. so that if you think of cough, for example, that could be a sense of itching in your airways, and you know, other types of senses like smell and so forth are, you know, perhaps part of this phenomenon of how we can detect noxious substances in our body, and you know, how your body then tries to respond to it. And I think that whole, you know, thing about the chronic rhinosinusitis and anosmia, loss of smell, and how dupilumab has been helpful is very interesting, and maybe that's something we can leverage for patients who have anosmia post, you know, viral infections. Okay, so finally, back to my story. The chronic itch lasted a little over 4 months. And as I said, I really didn't want to put myself to steroids and so forth. So I got to the point where I had to figure out what I wanted to do. And I think I was quite desperate at that point. And there were many nights when I was in tears because I couldn't sleep. My mental health was rapidly declining. If stress had brought this on, then the itch itself was so stressful. The lack of sleep particularly made it even harder to deal with. And at one point I just thought, I can't live like this. It's just unbearable. And again, you know, when you tell someone you have an itch, you know, a lot of times, I know, you know, people didn't say it. They tried to be kind, but you know, you kind of think, well, just don't scratch then. It's a big deal. It's just an itch, right? But it really significantly impacted my quality of life. And one day, when I was just desperate and, you know, dealing with the sensation of itching, I just had this thought of, F you, really. I just somehow was able to separate and look at this itch. I felt the intense itching, but there was a part of my brain that was somehow separate from this. This was actually well before I started meditating, but somehow a part of my mind kind of split itself up and just looked at the itch and said, F you. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just not going to deal with you. I refuse to deal with you. And from that time onwards, I basically just would sense the itch. It would still be just as intense as ever. And there would be this part of me that just said, no. No. I just wasn't going to scratch. I wasn't going to respond to it, and I was just going to ignore it. And I would just note the itch in my brain, and I would just say, F you, and just go on with my life. And, you know, somehow that made it more bearable. Obviously, because I stopped scratching, I stopped bleeding. I still couldn't wear a lot of clothes that had seams and things like that. And obviously the itching was just as intense, but this ability to separate my mind from it and to look at it, and I really kind of almost in my mind spat on it. I just looked at it in disdain and in disgust, and I just spat on this itch, and I just basically thought, I will just not respond to you. I despise you. And that's exactly what was going on in my mind. And then suddenly, one day, an idea popped into my head, and I said, you know, at this point, let's just try something different. And I decided I'm going to try acupuncture. Now, you know, I grew up in Singapore, and I remember we had back then and still now, we have your regular conventional medical system, but we also had the Chinese medical system, and we had a Chinese medical hospital. So people could go there and get treated. And often, you know, my mother would go there. For example, she had insomnia one time, and she went and was treated and was extremely effective, right? So I grew up used to this idea of both worlds. And I thought, well, you know, conventional medicine in the Western sense hasn't really helped. Okay, let's try something different. I need acupuncture. But I also wanted someone who had trained in the East because it's 7 years there and it's kind of different from the training here. I don't know a lot about the training here, so I'm only going to speak from my experience. And I know in the East it's at least 7 years, it's as long as medical school, and you have to work in a hospital. So it's not like you just do outpatient clinics. You actually have an entire hospital devoted to acupuncture where you treat conditions like diabetes and hypertension with herbs and with acupuncture. So that was what I knew. And I decided, okay, this is what I need. And I did a little bit of research and I found this person in Chinatown and went to see him. And the minute I walked in, I kind of felt like, okay, I think this is the right place. Because, you know, when I looked at his reviews, he didn't get good reviews, mostly because people complained. They said that the environment wasn't very conducive to acupuncture. And I think that's because most people, when they think of acupuncture, they think of being in a room by themselves. And it's sort of like going for a spa day or a massage, and you lie on the bed and you have nice music playing and it's all very, you know, peaceful and quiet and so forth. When I walked into this guy's office, it was just this room and it looked like an ER. It really had these curtains, you know, the different bays in the ER that are just separated by curtains. It looked exactly like that. And behind each curtain, it was just a plain stretcher and a patient lying or sitting there with needles stuck all over them. And so I thought, oh, this is familiar. This is what I remember from growing up. And I told him about my problem. He said, you have to come 3 times a week. Now, this is in Chinatown where parking is very, very difficult. But I went 3 times a week. And after about 2 to 3 weeks, actually it got a whole lot better. The itching really died down quite a bit. And at that point, he told me that I could come 2 times a week. Now, I at that point was thinking, you know what, I'm just going to be coming to this guy 3 times a week for the rest of my life, because, you know, it just felt so amazing to not have the sensation of itching again. But he said, no, you'll be fine 2 times a week. And I was really nervous, but I went 2 times a week for about 2 weeks. And then he said, you're just coming 1 times a week now. And now I was really nervous, but I went 1 times a week, actually just for 1 week. And he said, you're done. You don't need to come back unless the itching comes back. And I was really nervous. I said, are you sure? Are you serious? Because I don't mind. I'll come 3 times a week, you know, you've changed my life. And he said, no, you don't have to come back unless the itching comes back. And he gave me a few other specific things that he advised me to do to change my diet and so forth. So that took care of the itching. But maybe acupuncture, maybe you've tried acupuncture, maybe it hasn't worked for you. I will say, if you are in the situation that I was in, do consider looking for someone who's worked in an acupuncture hospital, because that's just what I experienced and what I decided to do, and that did work. So that might be one thing for you to consider. Other things to consider would be to make sure that your skin is well moisturized. So using lotions and creams that don't have fragrances but contain a lot of moisturizing agents, particularly ceramides, ceramides. And there are lots of over-the-counter solutions that you can use on your skin containing ceramides, and those will help moisturize and keep the skin barrier healthy. And you might also use some emollients, more like ointment types things, over the moisturizer just to keep the moisture in, because the drier your skin, obviously, then the more likely you are to itch. And then other things to consider would be your diet, and you want to make sure you have enough healthy fats in your diet. Make sure you get the omega-3s fish oil in your diet, because you know, at that time I don't think I was paying a lot of attention to omega-3s and healthy fats. So that would be something now in retrospect that I would do to make sure, again, that you supplement your diet with enough healthy fats, because again, a lot of times people are always told low fat, low fat, low fat, and they get to the point where, you know, really you're not having enough of the healthy fats in your diet. And of course, you know, just thinking about stress in your life and realizing that stress affects all of us. And now that I think back, there was a lot going on, you know. At the time, I just thought, you just push through, right? But there was a lot going on, and I didn't recognize it. I'm not very good at recognizing sometimes when I'm under a lot of stress. And I think that's true for a lot of us, right? We can see it more easily in others, and it's harder to see it in ourselves. And, you know, to think of ways where, you know, you can help yourself manage the stress better. I think for me, the acupuncture, the main thing with that was on managing my stress. And somehow that acupuncture was able, I think, to calm my stress reaction and, you know, help me heal. So there you go. That's my story with itching. And although I didn't kind of directly talk about the skin, I think I did in a way, because you can't talk about itching without specifically thinking about skin, because itching is really just in skin, right? So Mr. Blue, I hope that counts as my skin episode. I'm sure I'll have other episodes on the skin, but at least I wanted to make one skin episode and say that I had done that. And lastly, before I go, I thank you for bearing with the noise. I'm just trying to get this done. My schedule is very packed, and I just wanted to get it done and not have to worry about this all day. But I also wanted to say a big thank you to Christina and Seymour, and you know why. You know, it was good meeting up with both of you again. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night. It was, you said 13 years ago that you moved here to Barcelona. And I believe that my whole chronic itch thing occurred about 13 years ago, about the same time. So in some ways, I think this closes the loop on that. Muchas gracias, Christina and Seymour, again. And for everyone else, I'm signing out from the LMD round, and I sing the body electric. Ciao.